This is an iHeart podcast.
We're going to talk why and how communists use women as their most devout foot soldiers. We'll talk to Miranda Devine, Donald Trump going after evil banks. It's going to be a great night on I'm Right. In any walk of life, certainly in politics, but in any walk of life, any business, any political party, sports team, you will find that it's important to find your most loyal followers, to feed them, listen to them, guide them, find the people who will lay down in traffic for you and use their loyalty to further whatever you're trying to further. If it's your business, find the guy who's so happy to be there, grateful for his job, loves working there, and that's the guy. That's gonna be your guy. In politics, works the exact same way. Maybe you're confused about a few things you see from the Democrat Party today. When they get up and they say the crazy things they say, it's almost as if they don't care about you, the normal person. They're not even trying to talk to you. It's as if they're talking to a totally different species than you, and that is because they are. Because the Democrat Party's base, it used to be, you know, working people, poor people, that used to be kind of the base of the Democrat Party. And when they would give speeches, when they would run campaigns, they would campaign towards that. They would campaign for that. Those were their loyal followers. Hey, the poor people are going to turn out and vote for us. Blue collar will turn out and vote for us. And so they spoke to those people. But that day is past. Now, they are speaking to mentally ill women. And historically, mentally ill women have been the most loyal, most vicious, most violent followers of communism in every single country communism has been implemented. You know who was probably more evil than Mao Zedong? His wife. Just unbelievably evil. Story after story after story of communist countries where the women oversaw the torture programs, the women were the first ones to report people. But why? It's not because women are stupid or bad or evil. It's none of those things. Why and how? And because that's what's happened today with the Democrat Party. They only speak to those mentally ill women. I'm gonna show you a few different videos. I'm gonna go pretty fast, and then we're gonna discuss the why and how, because this is actually going to matter to you and your life, no matter who you are. First, let me introduce you to a history teacher who has no problem with child sacrifice.
Sacrifices were volunteers from the elite class because they believed that the elites were closer to the gods and could therefore appease them better. Also, in terms of sacrifice, they were kind about it, hear me out. Because unlike the Mexica, when you're like ripping out a still beating heart out of someone's chest, the Inca would intentionally use coca leaves and would use chicha and would drug up the sacrifice and then leave them on a mountain, a cold, chilly mountain, to be exposed to the elements. Which, if you're a volunteer sacrifice where you're heavily drugged before you die. Also, I mean, I can equate human sacrifice throughout history to so many things. And I think the fact that a lot of people are commenting, oh, but the sacrifice, is again indicative of the fact that you have received a quite white education because you are knowing them for the bad things that they have done and not all of the wonders that they accomplished.
So they killed a few kids. They left them on a mountaintop to freeze to death. They were voluntary. Stop being so white. Okay. Look at these women.
And on that revolutionary horizon, want to perform abortions at a church, you know, but before it's all said and done.
That the only real difference between marriage and prostitution is the price and the duration of the contract.
In addition to abolition of family policing, you argue for abolition of the family in general, and say that the institution of the family acts as part of the carceral system in the way that it reinforces children as property.
I think the left is constantly surprised at how few people are
you know, ready for revolt, despite, you know, the extremely dire conditions that we are in that keep becoming more and more dire every day.
Women and children are the most harmed by capitalism, but also women and children are the architects of their fate.
Okay. Tell you what, one more, then we're going to have a long talk. Cynthia Nixon, actress, not ashamed of her insane family, brags about all those tranny kids.
I am here today as the mother of a proud trans man. I am here today as the aunt of a proud trans man. My best friend's kid is trans, and my kid's best friend is trans. My wife and I, our lives are filled with the most amazing, beautiful, brave trans people, young and old, but especially young. And the idea that this city is filled with young people who thought they had a place to go where they could receive the highest care, and that place has now been shut to them, sickens me to my core.
I know, it's sick, it's evil, it's demonic, it is. So, let's talk. Tell you what, pause on that for a second. Why do militaries fill up with young men? All around the world throughout history, and I know women have to be included in everything today, but historically, why are young men so great in the military? It's not purely physical, of course. That's a big part of it. They're young, they're strong, I get that, but why? Well, the truth is, young men, before your brain fully develops, when your body is basically pure testosterone, young men are more willing to take risks, more willing to do dangerous things. I'm 44 now. When I look back at the things I've done in my life, I mean, you name it, the craziest thing. I could have died so many times. That never crossed my mind. Why? I was young. So, militaries, historically, they take the natural inclination of a young man, and I don't want to say twist it, but they use it for their purposes. Hey, you want to do some fun, dangerous stuff? Put on a uniform. We'll give you a gun. That's the exact same way, the exact same reason communists use women. You see, women have a wonderful, wonderful motherly nature. They're born with it. It's how God made them. A motherly nature about them. Whether or not they have children, that doesn't matter. They have a wonderful, caring, motherly nature. That's why they're better nurses. That's why, honestly, they're better at the home. I won't say better parents. Men have just as important a role. But, you know, my kids need breakfast. My wife's going to think about that. I won't. Get yourself something. They just have a wonderful, motherly nature. Well, just like those young men with militaries, communists take that wonderful, motherly nature and they twist it. They use it for their purposes, and this is how they do it. It happens to young women. Young women will get twisted like this. Your daughter will get twisted like this at college if you're not very careful. They will go off and they will take the motherly nature, and instead of aiming that motherly nature where it's supposed to be aimed, towards children, caring for a home, caring for children, they will instead take their enemies. They will take their enemies, the communists will, and they will tell that woman that those are the enemies of your children, and your children are whoever their allies happen to be. You see, in the United States of America, here's how this works. You remember that first woman, the history teacher, who told you that you're learning white history? American communists, American women, have been taught, their motherly nature has been taught, that they are to protect at any cost immigrants of any kind of minority, anybody who's a non-Christian, all these people, criminals, flat out violent criminals, rapists, murderers, their wonderful motherly nature has been manipulated and twisted to essentially be the mother of those groups. And therefore, anybody who's the enemy, a perceived enemy of those groups. Do you want border security? Do you want criminals locked up? Do you want children taught about the greatness of America? Well, she will fight you tooth and nail because she is protecting her children. What do mothers do with their children? They fight, they will lay down their lives. They'll kill for their children because they have a wonderful motherly nature. That is why they are the most committed communists in the history of the world. Their motherly nature is manipulated to mother the communist allies and oppose the communist enemies. And if you spend enough time in that demonic world of make-believe, you will end up 74 years old and completely insane.
I'm just so scared. I'm 74 years old. I worry about everything. And I just am so scared and upset. And I don't understand why people voted for this person.
74 years old. I think about my grandma, God rest her soul, Grandma Helen. When I showed up at her house, she was usually in her garden. She knew we were coming. She was a terrible cook, by the way, but she made the best applesauce and bread in the world. She'd have some homemade applesauce and bread for us. She quilted. That 74-year-old woman has had her mind and her soul broken and poisoned for 74 years old. Now what is she? And that's why, by the way, I pointed out that they were some of the worst torturers and executioners. That's why you routinely see America's women communists, female communists, acting like this.
Hi. I want to know how you can vote.
We can't answer the door right now, but if you'd like to leave a message, you can do it now.
Shameful. Are you the one that walks by here and always screaming at people?
No, I haven't walked by recently.
Okay, because a lot of people walk by and scream.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You are voting for the devil. Don't you know that?
No.
Why are you voting for him?
Because I believe he is the moral candidate.
Oh, my God. F*** you for that one.
That's
moral?
Exactly right. That's how your side acts.
Oh, my God.
That's
he's
how
the
you
most
guys...
immoral person around.
In your opinion, that's okay.
Oh,
have a nice day. God, but
everybody's opposed to you.
God bless you.
Oh.
How could a woman act like that? She's protecting her babies. That's what they do. Be very, very careful. Gentlemen, be very careful who you marry. Parents, be very, very careful with that girl you've raised for 18 years because you send her off to a communist training camp. They might just take that wonderful nature you've put in her and turn her into a demon. She'll chop all her hair off, drive home a Subaru, and tell you how evil you are for your white privilege. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Miranda Devine sat down with Tulsi Gabbard. I'm so impressed with Tulsi Gabbard. I haven't historically been a big fan. I haven't hated her, but just not a big fan. But I've been so impressed. I want to get Miranda Devine's measure of her. Before I do that, I want to get your measure of your olive oil. How is it? How much time do you spend thinking about your olive oil? Not enough. Olive oil we buy in the grocery store is old and crappy. We don't know this because it's all we've ever known. That's all I've ever had is grocery store olive oil. Go look at the date. Go grab that bottle of olive oil you have in your house and go look at the date. It's old. Get a fresh bottle and your dinner comes alive. Farmfresh246.com. They'll send you a $39 bottle for free because they're ridiculously confident in their olive oil. A fresh bottle of olive oil with actual flavor. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
They get away with it with Russia, the Russia hoax, you know, what's ever going to stop it?
Accountability.
And does that
accountability
mean jail?
Has to take place.
Is that jail?
We've referred all of the documents we have found. We will continue to refer them to the Department of Justice for a criminal referral.
Miranda Devine continues to get all the heavy hitters for her podcast on Pod Force One. It's amazing. Anyway, you already know Miranda Devine. She's always welcome on this show. Miranda, you had a chance to sit down with Tulsi Gabbard, and you understand what a mean cynic I am about all these people, but I've been so impressed by Tulsi Gabbard. Were you impressed?
Totally. She is the real deal, and I think there's something special about her because she was sort of blooded in the Democratic Party machine. Remember, she was actually the vice president of the DNC at one point, and she was targeted for destruction by Hillary Clinton. So if anybody knows the wicked ways of Clinton, Obama, and the rest of these Democrat wrongdoers, it's Tulsi Gabbard. And since she herself was the victim, like Donald Trump, of their dirty tricks, she kind of knows where the bodies are buried and how they work to try and obstruct any transparency. And she's pretty determined, I think, that accountability will fall on these people.
Miranda, do you get the sense that she carries that chip around on her shoulder? Not that I'm complaining, frankly, I hope she does, but do you get the sense that that's a motivating factor for her? When you're put on a domestic terrorist watch list, that tends to get people upset.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really characterize it as a chip on her shoulder because I think it's less personal than, you know, about her concern for the fact that, you know, really democracy was subverted, that the people's will in the 2016 election when they voted for Donald Trump was subverted by these sore loser Democrats, by Hillary Clinton, by Barack Obama and his ego, wanting to salve his ego because he was so conclusively repudiated by the election of Donald Trump, who was really the opposite of Obama, the anti-Obama. And so I think that's more what motivates her. And I think she's particularly sort of exercised about it because she went to war. She's a lieutenant colonel in the National Reserve. She went to war as a medic. She was in Iraq. She saw several of her compatriots killed and maimed in a war that its predicate was false information and false intelligence, fake intelligence, manufactured intelligence. And that's exactly what's happened in this case by some of the same characters. I mean, she points out in the interview that Jim Clapper, her predecessor as DNI under Obama, had boasted freely about the fact that he was behind some of that intelligence that led us into the Iraq war in the first place that turned out not to be true about, you know, WMDs. So those same deep staters, intelligence people, national security people who have their own hidden malevolent agendas have been in charge for a very long time. And she's seen firsthand the consequences. And I think therefore she wants to root it out.
What'd she tell you about the Russia hoax stuff?
Well, that, you know, it comes from Obama and Hillary Clinton are at the top of the tree, that this intelligence was manufactured, and that it was done to delegitimize Donald Trump's 2016 victory and to sabotage his presidency. I mean, she calls it a years-long coup. And in fact, that is exactly what it was. It really crippled his presidency, crippled his ability to get people to work for him, get the people who did work for him to trust him. You know, always in the back of their minds, particularly the more sort of institutionalist-minded people that were his appointees in his administration, in the back of their mind was always this, you know, question about really was Donald Trump an agent of Russia. And the other thing is that, you know, that hobbled his ability to normalize relations with Russia. She talks about this, which is something that would have been beneficial for America and the world, because really China was our most potent adversary, Russia's, you know, small kind of inconsequential country. And if and this was something that, I mean, the Obama administration was trying, multiple administrations thought that would be a good idea. But Donald Trump, I guess, you know, had to kind of prove his own innocence by not going easy. In fact, I think he went bent over backwards to be seen to be not friendly to Russia in his first term, which was not what he had planned to do. And as a result, I think any opportunity to kind of bring Russia into the sort of civilized orbit of countries, just, you know, that just fell by the wayside. And the result is what you see now, is this tragedy unfolding in Ukraine.
Why do you think they're so worried about us normalizing relations with Russia? Miranda, every time I dig into this with people who know things, it always comes back to they were worried about us cozying up to Russia, worried about us cozying up to Russia. What is with this never-ending live-or-die commitment to fighting with Russia until the end of the age? What is it?
Look, I think there are multiple reasons. One may be that, you know, if you stop Russia from being the big, you know, the demon, then you're focusing more on China, which is much more of a threat. And a lot of people in this country with a lot of power are making and have made a lot of money out of China. And, you know, China has completely cannibalized American manufacturing, now holding us over a barrel on, you know, rare earth minerals and so on. And so I think that the short-sighted reason was, you know, Joe Biden was one of those who really encouraged America to allow China into the World Trade Organization in 2001. And so that sort of project that has enriched so many people, I think, would have been stymied if Russia was no longer perceived as any sort of a problem and we focused our attention on China. And then, of course, it's, you know, the old cliche about the military-industrial complex. I mean, it's good for business to have Russia be the enemy, and you know, all these countries nearby and NATO have to arm up to defend against it.
What an ugly, tangled web. Miranda, keep exposing it. I appreciate you, as always. Thank you. All right. We have so much more to talk about. Debanking. What have you heard about that? What do you know about that? Well, let's talk about some punishment in the debanking industry. Before we talk about that, you're really going to be motivated to put your money where your morals are after we're done talking about it. Why don't you do that right now, really quickly? Corporate America did not sit on the sidelines when the communists were attacking you and me. Corporate America got off the sidelines, got in the fight against us. They did. And it wasn't just one company or two. The large corporations in this country hate us. Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile have used your money and used their efforts against us, against you, against me, against our culture. How do we punish them for that? Punishment is important. It's very important. Switch to PureTalk. PureTalk never did that. PureTalk never would. PureTalk's CEO walked the jungles of Vietnam for this country. PureTalk's so patriotic, they hire Americans. Right here at home, you'll save a fortune. You keep your phone, keep your number, or get a new one. They have that too. Switch. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Fear and pain. We discuss this a lot when it comes to communists, so let's rehash it for those who may have just joined us. Communists are not political. The liberal Aunt Peggy in your life, the Democrat you know, they're not political. You are political. They are religious. They are devoutly religious. And religious fanatics like that, like Islamic jihadis, that's how you need to think about Democrats, they only will respond to fear and pain. When you think about that jihadi with a nail bomb in his backpack getting ready to walk into a school and blow himself up, think about how you would stop him. You're going to stop him in the parking lot and reason with him? You're going to explain to him why it's bad, why he's a hypocrite, why... None of those things would make a dent. He's a religious fanatic. The only thing that works is fear and pain. Communists work the same way. Whenever communists take power at any level, any amount of power, it doesn't matter whether they have a little, might be the public library, hey, let's get some gay books. It might be President of the United States and everything in between. When they have power, they will use that power against the enemies of their religion. The only way to get them to stop doing that is to hurt them. I wish there was another way. There's no other way to deal with these people. Let's talk about one way they use their political power. Banking, debanking. The Biden administration, you know, the federal government has been sadly intertwined with the big banking, big finance industry in this country. And the Biden administration started essentially guiding these banks to look out for terms like MAGA or Trump, taking away people's bank accounts. This has happened multiple times to people in the United States of America, people on the right, gun people and others. They'll get a call from their bank. Hey, we're closing your account. You're not allowed to have a bank account? And keep in mind, again, the communist doesn't think he's doing anything wrong. He has power. He has power over the banking industry. So he should be allowed, of course, to use that power against his enemies. You just saw New York Times ran an article on there saying, well, you don't have a right to a bank account. The communist will take a bank. The communist will force or coerce that bank to take away your bank account. And the communist will think he didn't do a thing wrong. Of course I should be able to use my power to smash you. You're an enemy of my religion. So how do we get them to stop? Well, we have to punish them. We have to not just call these things out. Jim Jordan's actually the reason we know a lot of this stuff. We can't just call these things out. We have to punish the people who did these things. Let's focus on the Biden administration. During the Biden administration, we had 4 years of unchecked communist power in this country. Joe Biden, as we know now, was a useless cadaver that wasn't in charge of anything. So he sat in the corner, sucking on his thumb, and the animals in his administration, complete Maoists, the Anita Dunns of the world, the Lisa Monacos, all these types, they ran the United States of America in a way an unchecked communist will run the United States of America. So, Democrats will come back to power one day. I hope not, but you and I both know that's going to happen. Let's not be naive here. Maybe it's 2028. I don't know. Maybe it's 2032. They're coming back. The next time they take power, why wouldn't they do it again?
There's only one thing they understand. What is it? Well, two things. What is it? Fear and pain. They'll do everything they did before and worse if we don't hurt them right now. Donald Trump's talking about debanking.
By the way, speaking of you, and you've done a fantastic job, but I hope you start opening your bank to conservatives, because many conservatives complain that the banks are not allowing them to do business within the bank, and that included a place called Bank of America. They don't take conservative business. And I don't know if the regulators mandated that because of Biden or what, but you and Jamie and everybody, I hope you're going to open your banks to conservatives, because what you're doing is wrong.
They debanked him?
I had J.P. Morgan Chase. I had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. I could see if they want to, if they want to do something bad because you don't have any money and you're defaulted and you're this. They took people out, but I'll give you me as an example. I had hundreds of millions. I had many, many accounts loaded up with cash. I was loaded up with cash, and they told me, I'm sorry, sir, we can't have you. You have 20 days to get out. I said, you got to be kidding. I've been with you for 35, 40 years. The banks discriminated against me very badly. I believe that Biden or Kamala, and I don't think they're smart enough to do it, but the people that are surrounding the beautiful resolute desk, you know, the high IQ people that are radical left, I believe they told the banking commission, the bankers, that the banking regulators, do everything you can to destroy Trump. And that's what they did. And guess what? I'm president. How did that happen?
Melania Trump wrote in her book that their son, Barron, got denied a bank account after Trump left the White House. Banks have to be punished for that. Punished publicly. I'm glad there's an executive order, but we have to punish the communist demons who took part in these things, because otherwise they will do it again. Fear and pain. That's all the communist understands. All right. Let's talk about chalk. Let's talk about something good. Something positive. You know what's positive? Your testosterone after you start taking some natural herbal supplements from chalk. That's what's positive. And I'm positive that you're going to be in a better mood. Full of energy. You know how great it feels to be full of energy now? Believe me, I was doing the same thing you're doing, pouring an extra pot of coffee or three at 2 p.m. because I'm just trying to get through the day. I don't have that anymore. If I drink coffee in the afternoon, it's just because I want to. I feel good, and I want you to feel good. Chalk is here. You know when you get a subscription, by the way, at chalk.com/JesseTV, you get a 17.76% discount. Isn't that cool? 17.76% discount. chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
You know, one of the questions asked of me this morning is, are you going to make a dividend to the people? And the purpose of what I'm doing is primarily to pay down debt, which will happen in very large quantity. But I think there's also a possibility that we're taking in so much money that we may very well make a dividend to the people of America.
Okay. We're $37 trillion in debt. If there's a plan to pay that off that's realistic, you can sign me up for it. Joining me now, John Carney, Breitbart News, Finance, and Economics Editor. Okay, John, walk me through this, because you know I need all the help you can possibly offer. We're taking in money. We're going to use it to pay down the national debt. Do I have that right?
Yes, we're kicking in a lot more in tariffs than anybody thought. And none of that money was budgeted for. So when the CBO does the, you know, projections about where the deficit's going to be in 5 years, 10 years from now, none of that had tariff revenue built in. So we're actually bringing in hundreds of billions of extra dollars. It would make a lot of sense to use that to reduce the deficit or to cut taxes. Doing a like a one-time dividend check really doesn't get you very much. I understand, you know, people like getting checks, but it doesn't have a lot of economic oomph, really. You'd be better off using it to reduce capital gains taxes, reduce income taxes, reduce corporate taxes, or, as the president said, you know, we just got a big tax cut. We just passed the big one beautiful bill, right? I guess it's the one big beautiful law now. We don't, you know, maybe just use it to bring down the deficit.
Okay, so can you walk me through how that works, John? Can they just do it? Do we need Congress to do this? Can Donald Trump just say, hey, send it to the deficit? Look, I've never taken in a surplus before. I don't even know how to deal with this world. How does this work?
No, so it will automatically go to reduce the deficit because Congress didn't budget, you know, wasn't planning on spending this money. So extra revenue just means that the government doesn't have to borrow as much. So if they do nothing at all, then this extra revenue will reduce the deficit. And so that's one of the reasons I'm actually pretty hopeful. We don't need Congress to pass a law. In fact, if they pass a law, they'll probably mess it up and do something, you know, decide to spend the money. If you tell Congress, you know, every time Donald Trump says, oh, we're taking in all this revenue, I get worried. Because if you tell Congress it has more money, it's going to figure out a way to spend that money. And so I'd much rather have them, you know, like maybe like just don't tell them at all. Let them find out at the end of the year when it turns out that the deficit is much lower than they thought it would be because we took in all this revenue.
Okay, let's talk about the overall tariff situation. In fact, let's focus first on India. Trump has been slapping around the Indians for a couple days now. He's mad they're buying Russian oil. Should I, as an American consumer, be concerned that we're slapping a big tariff on them? Or what am I going to see? What in my life's going to go up besides the curry?
So the curry isn't imported. You're not going to see a lot go up. What we import from India is a lot of stuff that then gets processed into other things, pharmaceuticals, ingredients that go into medicines. I don't think that consumers are going to see a big difference. And frankly, I don't think these tariffs will stick at the level that, you know, at the 50% level that Donald Trump is proposing, because this is going to cause an earthquake inside of India. It's like the Liberation Day tariffs. Remember, Donald Trump proposed, you know, these very high tariff levels, and then they came down because countries wanted to cut deals. I think India is going to look at it and say, well, yeah, we like buying oil from Russia, but it's far more important to our economy to be able to sell things at, you know, a reasonable tariff level to the U.S. The 50% level is basically, you know, comes close to being an embargo on buying things from India. They are going to come to heel pretty quickly, especially because, look, the entire world, practically, except for China and Iran, maybe North Korea, really doesn't think that they should be buying oil from Russia, which supports the war in Ukraine anyway. So it's not a very popular thing for them to be doing. I think they're going to, you know, cut a deal pretty quickly, again, just because we are more important to their economy than Russian oil.
Why are they buying oil from Russia? Is that just come down to a simple proximity thing, John? Because they're right there? Because, there are lots of places that sell oil. There's oil everywhere now.
Sure, but Russia has a problem in that it produces a lot of oil, and there aren't very many places that will buy it from them. So you can buy it cheap. India then refines that oil and sends it on to other people. So it's actually making money by taking in Russian oil, not just using it, you know, for themselves, but actually then selling refined oil around the world. So they are, in a way, you know, acting as like a middleman for Russian oil to the rest of the world. That's what Donald Trump really wants to stop. It's, you know, they make money off it. They get the margins from it. But I would be very surprised if they decided, no, we'd rather anger Donald Trump. We would rather, you know, get ourselves locked out of the U.S. market than give up this source of revenue, which really only exists because the war is going on and the rest of the world has sanctions on Russian oil. They're taking advantage of a situation that they should not be.
John, can you explain? I understand you're an economics guy. So what are the economics, or what is the political situation? You mentioned it would cause an earthquake inside of India. Is this an unstable country? Are they relatively stable? India is very much an enigma to most people. People don't understand it.
Right. So India has a relatively stable political situation, especially for a country that has the incredible size and diversity. It actually holds together pretty well. But if the Indian economy is subject to a 50% tariff on things they sell to the U.S., the economy will crumble, and that will bring down the government. It could create, you know, even worse instability, which I don't think we want. I don't think Donald Trump would like to see India, you know, split apart because of the economic tensions. But I think it could bring down the government in India very quickly if you had, if the economy shuts down, which it will do if they have this 50% tariff for very long.
Okay, let's talk then about the big bad boy in the room, China. China buys oil from Russia. Donald Trump is slapping around the poor Indians, but the Chinese are guilty, or more guilty than anyone else, of propping up Russia in their war. So what do we do about that? What can we do about that? Because they still have so many things we need.
Yeah, we're in a much tougher position when it comes to China. I think one of the things we're doing with India is actually trying to say to India, like, look, guys, you've been sort of non-aligned for a long time, and it's time to choose sides. Like, sign up with the good guys, right? We're the good guys. Come sign up with us. China can't sign up with the good guys because they're not part of the Justice League. They're the Hall of Doom, or whatever they called it back in the, you know, cartoons we used to watch when we were kids. They are the Hall of Doom. China should try to, China's not going to move away from doing as much economic deals as they do with Russia. They're just not going to. So there's probably not a lot we can do in that score. I think we're going to find out over the next year and a half that China's actually pretty intractable. They're not going, they'll keep conversations going, they'll keep talks going. The Trump administration has been extending those talks, but I think eventually they're going to realize that it's not going to work. We're going to have to begin to figure out how we disentangle our economy from theirs. We can't do it instantly because for 25 years, we kept enmeshing our economy with ours. We shipped our manufacturing over to China. It's going to take some time to disentangle that. And look, the Trump administration will say, no, we don't want to decouple. That's not what we're trying to do. We're just trying to get China to change its ways. They're not going to change their ways, and we're going to eventually have to decouple.
John, what does it mean that Apple's investing $600 billion into America? This is good, I assume? Bad? Yeah. A little in between?
It's good. Apple really should get out of China. Maybe they stay in China to manufacture for the Chinese market, but they really need to begin to onshore manufacturing of iPhones into the United States, or at least into Mexico, into somewhere in Latin America. Would be much better off for Apple. It would be better off for Latin America. It would be better off for the United States. Doing it in China, yes, people will tell you, well, look, China has all these experts in making iPhones. But that didn't happen overnight. It it's not like the Chinese are born knowing how to make iPhones better than the rest of the world. Apple trained these people how to make iPhones. They can do it again in another country. Again, that won't happen instantly. So one of the things I think Apple is doing with these is trying to set up the expertise they need to make more of their products here in the United States. That's good. That needs to happen. They should become less dependent on China just for pure business reasons. Because as I said, I don't think that it is that China is a reliable provider of the iPhone. If I were Tim Cook, I would say, okay, what are the odds 20 years from now, you know, over the next 20 years, that the US has a major conflict with China? I think they're pretty high. And so if your entire business depends on, you know, stuff coming from China, your business is at risk. So just as a straight out business case, they need to extricate themselves from China, decouple Apple from China.
John, thank you, my brother, as always. It's time for Lighten the Mood. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It's time to lighten the mood. And this is kind of an unorthodox lighten the mood. Normally, we like a feel-good story, or even better, someone hurting themselves. What's funnier than that? But Adam Schiff, you of course remember Adam Schiff. What does Trump call him? Pencil neck, I think it is, because he kind of looks like a lollipop. Got this big old head and this little pencil neck. Either way, Adam Schiff, now United States Senator Adam Schiff, has been lying to the American people for a very long time about everything under the sun. One of the, I am partisan, but I'm not saying this as a partisan, one of the truly scummy people in politics, both personally and professionally, just a slime ball. You know, when you look at that, when you look at him, you hear him talk, you know, probably a bad guy. You wouldn't want to be his neighbor, I'll put it that way. Well, Adam Schiff is in some legal trouble. He has been officially referred for a criminal investigation. Why? Adam Schiff lied on mortgage documents. I know that sounds small, it's not near enough, all the evil things he's done, he should go away for life. I know, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. I understand the punishment should be more severe, but that is a big deal. It is a crime. I'm not telling you Adam Schiff's going to prison, but government people being held to account at any level is not something I'm used to. So if we're going to get a little something, I'll take it. Lightens my mood. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.